And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back with you. Buck, had a chance to get away a little bit, get a little refreshed, and it's good to be back, man. How was your weekend?
Man, it's been a good weekend. Holiday weekend, graduation weekend. My son graduated from high school.
Congratulations to Trey.
Yeah. Trey is on his way to San Jose State to chase some dreams and do some stuff, so it should be cool. But it's good. Like, it's funny because this weekend, Memorial Day weekend, is kind of like funny, right? Because you know how we're so used to being in the scouting biz where you have these milestones or these markers. Normally, when you get the Memorial Day, you know, it's a couple more weeks of OTAs, and then that's when we're supposed to have quote vacation, because it starts in earnest in July. And so we have one more little milestone, that's 4th of July, because once you get the 4th of July weekend, your mind has to start gearing up for the season, whether that's as a college scout beginning to think about your junior tape and stuff done, getting ready to go to training camp to set your schedule and all of those stuff, if they still do it that way. Or if you are on the NFL side, getting ready to go to training camp. And with everyone starting camp at the same time, this should be interesting.
Tell you what, I think tomorrow is the day that I start watching the college guys. So that break is officially over. So jump in, start doing that. But it's, in some ways, it's one of my favorite times of the year because you don't know anything about these guys. And there's like a – I think there's a purity to spring scouting, maybe more so than what you do in the fall, because you don't know anything about these guys. You haven't heard any buzz. You just cold. It's like a cold call, man. You just pop on the tape and you see what you see.
Yeah, I do wonder this. I've done this going back. DJ, I think my best opinions on players are in the summertime before I kind of get to it. If you go all the way back, by the time you get to the draft, if you go back and look at your notebook from the first time that you were exposed to them in the summer, I bet you more times than not that first evaluation is probably the most accurate one, because as you talked about the purity, it is pure, it is unfiltered. You haven't got into like some of the think tank where everyone begins to talk about where this guy is going to go. At this point, it's just an evaluation on how you see him playing at the next level. You point out some things that you like to see him work on in the fall, but really it's a talent assessment. This is the talent, this is where I see it, these are the strengths and the weaknesses, bang, this is the player. Sometimes when we get into the season, it's more about projecting and putting them round value and all that other stuff. And sometimes that can taint the evaluation.
Yeah, no, it's true. And it is a good exercise to go back there and look at it. I used to, and this kind of in the weeds nerdy stuff, but I used to have my spring/summer scouting notebook. Mm-hmm. And then when we get to the fall, I have a fresh notebook and start over. And then I realize, I want to be able to call back on some of the junior tape, you know, or sophomore tape, as it would be for some of these underclassmen. So I'd start just one notebook. So you go buy the notebook and then off you go, and you'll have the 2020 tape, you know, write the notes right next to the 2021 tape.
Yeah, it's funny because you're the multiple color pen guy. I am. Oh, yeah. Because I don't like writing with a ballpoint pen. That's why I can never be the multicolor guy. Like, I can never get there. But I know you've been the four click pen guy in the past, that you would kind of divvy it up. For me, I do like doing that, but I like going all the way. Oh my gosh, look at all of those different colors.
Look at that. It's too many colors. Little slice of heaven.
It's too many colors. It's too many colors for me. But what I do like about the summer and kind of building on it, some of these guys you begin to hear about, like the younger players, for instance, Stingley from LSU, right? He was a big time recruit. You kind of heard about him or whatever. So you kind of peekaboo scout him, right? You're looking at somebody else, but you take a look and like, hey man, he's a pretty good player or whatever. I kind of like to compile a full body of work on the player, because I think sometimes if things go awry their final season, to be able to call up, hey man, his freshman year, he was really good. His sophomore year, he was really good. For whatever reason, his junior year, something got amiss. Did they have a DB coach change? Did they have a coordinator change? Did they change the way that they played? And so, you know, when you're an area guy, like they talk about knowing your area fully, you should know everybody in your area. You should know who's coming, who's going, and all of those things. I'm still kind of partial to kind of taking that approach, trying to track guys from the time they walk in the door.
All right. I want to jump in today, talk some wideouts and just really overall positional value, kind of get it going with the Julio Jones discussion, why that's happening, what we think of that, you know, that going down. So I want to hit on the Julio Jones thing as well as some of our expectations for some of these young wideouts in the league. But before we get to the wideout discussion, I did want to let you chime in here on Patrick Mahomes. I thought I had an interesting comment the other day.
Like DJ, here's the thing. Like, it's been pulled a little bit out of context because everyone focuses on the 20-0 thing. I think what Patrick Mahomes demonstrates and illustrates when he steps to the podium, to me, he is the perfect leader. He's the perfect franchise quarterback when it turns to getting it. Because the question was about goals and individual things that you're shooting on. He said, look, the only record that I have my eye on is going 20-0. Like, that's the only thing I really care about. Like, I want us to play our best. I want us to be a team that kind of runs roughshod over the league, and we win a Super Bowl. Like, to me, I thought it was the perfect answer. And what's funny about it, it's amazing how our view of the Kansas City Chiefs has changed a little bit because they failed to get it done in the Super Bowl. But if you go back at the end of – before last season, they were talking about a dynasty and running it back. And when I look at this team is well-constructed to be a team that is always in the conversation when it comes to title contenders. And I think you and I might agree on this. If you're a general manager, the only thing that you want is to have a team that is always in a discussion.
Yeah.
That
you want each to get the tournament.
Every year, each and every year we're in the tournament and we have a legitimate chance to be the last one standing. And it doesn't always happen like that. But if you're a team that, let's, for instance, talk about the Patriots. When the Patriots weren't going, they may lose in the AFC Championship game. To me, that is what you want to be as a team builder. You can't win them all, but you certainly always want to be in the conversation. And when teams start talking about who are the teams that we have to compete with to get to the championship game or to win it, you always want your team to be in it. And I think Kansas City is that. And I think Patrick Mahomes has been focused on being that for a long time.
So here, a question on them, big picture with the team. And I kind of have my answer on this, but I'd be curious what you think. We've seen it with what we perceive we're going to be dynasties. The Seahawks are a great example, right? Go to a couple, and we kind of assume this is going to be a decade of them, you know, getting three or four Super Bowls when they won that first one. Didn't happen. Now, there were team, you know, the league made some adjustments there, and it caught up a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think even, you know, even though they didn't win one, I think the Rams going mm-hmm. to that Super Bowl and McVay kind of ahead of the league, it felt like that this was – okay, they're going to be there. They're going to be right there on the doorstep every single year. They haven't got back into the big game. So do you think that the league has closed the gap at all with Kansas City, or you think this is a much wider window than those other teams?
I actually think they have a wider window because what they've done is they've rebuilt the team on the fly. Think about all the changes that they made to the offensive line. Orlando Brown coming over. They bring in the kid from New England, the offensive lineman.
Joe Tooney.
Helped them. Joe Tooney to help them get going. You have Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce coming back. I would say the weak spot would be the defense, but they put so much pressure on you with their ability to score points that it make it really, really hard for you to create the defensive struggle where you can expose the defense. I think their window is wide open, and I think the way that they have kind of tied the contracts together where Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill kind of come due around the same time, they always have a two or three year window where they can look, evaluate, okay, how do we want to proceed now? Do we blow it up? Do we tweak it? Do we go forward as we're going? I think they've done a great job of creating kind of a self-check and balances system within their team that will enable them to be there for the long haul with Patrick Mahomes, the quarterback.
I agree with you. I think the window is open here. I would say the one thing that cannot happen with them, obviously Mahomes is his own deal. You got to keep him healthy. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the rest of their roster, to me, it's keeping Kelce rolling. You know, keep him upright, keep him healthy. Because if you pull him out, I feel like this team becomes it's a whole lot easier to defend now. Because mm-hmm. now you can go over the top of Tyreek Hill. You don't have to worry about the middle of the field. To me, people say, oh, what if Tyreek Hill got hurt? Well, they still have speed. You know, they got Pringle. Yeah. They've got Mecole Hardman. Like, they've got guys who are going to be able to get on top. There's no replacing Kelce. Like, that to me that's the only thing that can derail this thing is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, and I think if they were smart, they need to acquire another big-time tight end talent in the draft. Maybe develop one that's on their roster. They need another guy just in case. They need an insurance policy. And also, I believe diversification of their offense a little bit would help them. If they could go 12 personnel and have two legitimate weapons at the tight end spots, it would give them a different look, and it would force defenses to play them differently, and it may loosen the blanket on Tyreek Hill on the outside. But when I look at this team, man, this team can go, and I don't even fully feel like they tapped into what they could do in the backfield with Clyde Edwards-Helaire and some of the other stuff. I feel like there's still a lot of meat on the bone for them when it comes to really maximizing the talent on their offense. But I believe they're in the conversation. And if not for the Super Bowl loss, we will be talking about them in a different level, giving them a different level of reverence, because this team is loaded.
Yeah, and I think look at some of the additions. When you look at Orlando Brown, Tooney, Kyle Long, these guys are – they drafted Trey Smith, who gives them some depth along the inside. They took Creed Humphrey in the second round. I think all those guys, in my opinion, are actually better in a run game than they even are in a pass game. So I think that they can take some pressure off Mahomes. I know Andy loves to throw it as much as anybody, but I think that this has a chance to be a little bit more physical team.
Yeah, and I think if you go back and you really look at them when they were at their best, and I would say it, when they had Kareem Hunt, and Kareem Hunt was part of that offense, the machine was different, because they could give it to you however they wanted to. They could really pound it and grind it and cram it down your throat. They could throw it over your head. They really put you in a bind from a defensive standpoint. With Edwards-Helaire, they have that same capability, but up front, they couldn't move bodies like you want to when it comes to the running game. You alluded to this new rebuilt offensive line. They'll be able to get a push, and I think what they see is, ultimately, when you're a play caller, you ultimately would like to get single high coverage in some way, shape, or fashion, because it's the easiest coverage to defend. Running the ball gives you an opportunity to get teams out of that too deep shell where they're – look, we saw the game in Buffalo. We called it on Amazon. They had the safeties in the parking lot. And they were like, we're not going to let you throw it over. They needed to have a counter to those tactics, because, you know, everyone looks at the tape. They saw the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defended them, where they also – sat deep and made them play dink and dunk. You have to be able to run the football to get teams out of that coverage. And I think they made a concerted effort to become a better team, a more balanced offense.
Yeah. No, it's – yeah, again, to kind of summarize it as we move on to the wide receiver thing, yeah, the window is wide open, and good for Mahomes, you know, putting it out there on 20-0. That's the ultimate goal, man. You won't win every time you get on the grass. So I'm all for it. I like the fact that he said that. Your thoughts on the Julio Jones thing?
Man, there's so many thoughts, right? There's so many thoughts, because when you look at Julio is, to me, the prototypical number one receiver that we talk about in draft rooms. When we think about a number one receiver, a guy that we're going to spend a top five pick at a wide receiver, Julio Jones is kind of what that number one receiver should embody. When you think about his size, 6'3", 220 plus pounds, 4'3", 4'4", speed, physical, freak athlete, who also has a refined game, outstanding route runner, could create separation at his best. This is a guy that could tally it up. And really, I think what is amazing, before last season, DJ, he had six straight years where he had over 1,300 receiving yards. Now, the touchdowns, for whatever reason, don't correlate with the yards, and maybe that's a schematic thing, but his production as a number one receiver was unrivaled, unmatched. I mean, he's in the category of, I think right now he averages 95.5 receiving yards per game, which is first all time. Like, he's in that Jerry Rice category and discussion. And so that is in your mind. And it's kind of like playing the video game. When you play the video game, you think, hey, Julio Jones is going to be a 99 on Madden. Like, I want him. But at 32 years of age, a bit of an injury history where he just missed a bunch of games. He's had nicks and dings throughout his career. You just wonder, how much does he have left at that elite level when it comes to the performance? Yes, he's going to command attention because of the name and the jersey number, but how much does he have to be able to sustain it? We saw Jerry Rice and Randy Moss, as older players, still have a level of production and create the fear factor. Does Julio have that same thing? Because I think that determines whether you're willing to go all in and make a move to bring him over, thinking that it's a 2 or 3 year fix.
Yeah, here's the challenge, I would say, is that when you look at the downside to the trade. Okay. So if you're going to trade for Julio Jones, here's the downside. Number one, you got to part with picks. Now, I think a second round pick is probably what ends up happening. I don't think there's any chance they get a one. You can record this. I apologize if they do. If they get a one, I got to believe another pick's going back the other way. Yeah. I don't see that happening. So you're going to have to part with picks, probably a second round pick. You're going to have a huge hit on your salary cap for a couple years, and you're going to have to give him a new contract. So That's a three-part commitment to a guy who's now 32 years old, who, even though the production has still been solid, Buck, like you talk to people around the league, and I haven't got these numbers yet, but they say when you study the GPS numbers with him, each of the last 3 years, it's going down. So you've got a descending player who wants more money, who's going to cost you picks, and is going to hit your salary cap. Like, that's a lot of negatives going to get one positive.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot. And so it has to be in a very short, concentrated stint. And so the two teams that have really been associated with them now that we hear a lot, Tennessee Titans and Seattle Seahawks. Here's why I believe, like, with Seattle, why Seattle would make this move. Because bringing Julio Jones over would also tie directly with Russell Wilson's contract. And everyone on the outside will say, hey, the Seattle Seahawks cave. This is one of the things that they're trying to do to make life better for Russell Wilson if they want him going forward, yada, 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 yada. But the reality is, they can get out of Russell Wilson's deal after next year with minimal thing. I think he's a free agent in 2023. And so if you think about bringing Julio Jones over right now, what he is, $15 million this year, it's $11 million next year. Then he's out at 2022. That's if you don't sweeten the pot or don't do anything. It also can coincide with them, maybe, because we've heard about the Seattle Seahawks knocking on the door at young quarterbacks. We've seen them at all these pro days. We've heard the conversation and discussion about them potentially looking for their next guy if things go sideways with Russell Wilson. This would give them an opportunity to max maybe the remaining years that they have with Russell Wilson to see if they can make the push before they really have to do the reset button on the team.
It almost, to me, feels like the last dance. Like, yeah, if you look at Seattle next year, they have no first round pick. That's with the Jets. They have no fourth round pick. So they have picks in the second and third round. You're going to part with probably the second round pick to get Julio. So now, y'all, you got a third round pick, you know, in the first four rounds next year. You've got no draft capital. So to me, this almost feels like this is our last ride with Russ.
Yeah.
So this is a 1 year push, and then hopefully we win a championship. If we don't, we're going to deconstruct this thing. We're going to trade Russell Wilson for a boatload of draft picks, whatever we can get, and kind of rebuild this whole thing.
Yeah, no, DJ, I think that is true. I think it's a 1 or 2 year run, depending on how it plays out this year. Also, I don't think we can underestimate Shane Waldron coming over from the LA Rams. If we think about the Rams, what did the Rams do primarily when they were at their best? 11 personnel, 3 wide receivers on the field. Potentially, if they made this move, Julio Jones, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett.
Pretty good.
Those are the three that are on the field. It takes pressure off Julio Jones to be the number one, because with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, you can equally distribute the ball to the playmakers on the perimeter. The structure part of the offense will take some of the pressure off Russell Wilson from having to do these spectacular improvisational plays that he's been doing for years and years on end. And I know people hate to hear this, so nerds, plug your ears. The running game will help them get out of this. Like, people didn't read the comments at the end of the year. Pete Carroll said, I am determined to make it where we do not have to face cover two, because the last 7 or 8 games of the year, teams played 2 high safeties and dared the Seahawks to either play in rhythm, which Russell Wilson doesn't do very, very well. He's not a quick rhythm dink and dunk passer. That's not his game. And or run the football consistently. And they weren't able to consistently run the football. Waldron coming over with his zone-based scheme, it should help them do some of those things. And if you want to look, just look at the Green Bay Packers and what happened in year two with Aaron Rodgers playing in a more structured offense and how much easier the game came for him.
One thing I would say it's different with that is that Green Bay offensive line versus Seattle offensive line.
Yeah.
Two
different animals. The Tennessee Titans, the natural thing with the Titans, you put him opposite A.J. Brown with Derrick Henry in the backfield, it now creates another dilemma for defenses. Eight-man box, you now have one-on-one with two big-time players on the outside. If it goes that route, if you don't do that, then it just makes it very, very difficult for you to deal with the running game, Derrick Henry, because you go two deep safeties, he is blowing up and obliterating all light boxes. So to me, it makes a lot of sense. It's just a matter of do the numbers fit.
Yeah, and again, you got to replace Corey Davis, so you need a big physical guy, and doesn't get any bigger and any more physical than Julio Jones, so that makes a lot of sense. All right, I want to get into some expectations here. Just some guys you think that could pop from this receiver group, and let's go back to the guys that were in the 2020 draft. So to kind of refresh you on some of these names, I'm going to run through a list of these guys. Now, this is a great receiver class, but I want to just get you to give me a couple guys you think could pop. We got Ruggs, we've got Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, Jalen Reagor with the Eagles, Justin Jefferson, Ayuk with the Niners, T. Higgins, Michael Pittman, man, it's a good group, LaVisca Chenault with the Jags, K.J. Hamler, Broncos, Chase Claypool, Steelers, Van Jefferson, Rams. Let's go Denzel Mims with the Jets. Just kind of let's start with that group right there, Buck. Who do you like popping?
First guy that pops to me is Jerry Jeudy from the Broncos. Last year he was plagued and victimized with the number of drops that he had on the perimeter. Look, I know that showed up and was in his film at Alabama. But, man, this dude is so wide open so often that I just think he finds a way to get it corrected. His ability to get open is one of the number one skills that you look at a playmaker. And so I just think it's a matter of him focusing and concentrating to make it happen, because I don't believe he has bad hands. But for whatever reason, the drops kind of took over. I think he pops. And I think another guy that pops this year, I would really keep an eye on CeeDee Lamb for the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, that's my number one dude. He was my top wideout going into that draft, and I think this is the year where he kind of – Justin Jefferson grabbed that spot last year, obviously with the all-pro mm-hmm. season that he had. I think CeeDee Lamb's going to close that gap this year.
Yeah, no, DJ, the reason why it makes sense when you look at the Dallas Cowboys, Dak Prescott coming back, like this is ridiculous, because I'm going to give you this number, and I just want – it to kind of marinate for a minute. Because I know everyone focuses last year before when Dak Prescott got hurt, he was averaging 371 yards. but that includes the game in which he got hurt. You take that game away, DJ, he was averaging 422 passing yards per game with three receivers, Michael Gallup, CeeDee Lamb, and Amari Cooper. You have to think that CeeDee Lamb is going to get a ton of catches. And I'm not saying that the Dallas Cowboys are going to throw it around the yard like that. But CeeDee Lamb is definitely going to be in play. And also, Michael Gallup will be a free agent at the end of this year. Do they begin to hand the baton to CeeDee Lamb to be 1B to Amari Cooper being 1A? Or does CeeDee Lamb go to the top of the charts and become the number one receiver? So then they can jettison Amari Cooper at the end of the year, because Amari Cooper is averaging $20 million per year. Are teams willing to pay that kind of money for a receiver when we've seen these young receivers have success?
Yeah, I think we're on the same page with CeeDee Lamb. I would, and I like Jeudy, but I think if you give me the choice, I'm gonna take Ayuk. I'm gonna take Ayuk over Jerry Jeudy on the stock mm-hmm. that I would buy for this coming season. I think he's more reliable. I think he's better with the ball in his hands. In other words, mm-hmm. he can break tackles. He can make you miss. Do all those things. I love the system that he's in. I think they're gonna get him in space and let him make things happen. I think you'll see him a little bit in the backfield as well with all the creativity that Shanahan's gonna throw out there. But yeah, I'm buying big on Ayuk.
No, I like Ayuk. I like what the San Francisco 49ers can do potentially in this offense, not only with the running game, but their ability to take advantage of the one-on-one coverage they're going to get on the outside. Because remember, George Kittle is back, and George Kittle in the middle of the field commands attention. And because he commands so much attention with the running game that they have in place out of 21 personnel, you're talking about one-on-one coverage on the outside each and every down. Brandon Ayuk is going to win. He can win in a variety of different ways. And even though he has to split some of that with Deebo Samuel, I do like his emergence. Another guy that I would keep an eye on, and I don't want to be a homer, but I would say just keep an eye, like fantasy footballers, just keep a close eye on LaVisca Chenault.
LaVisca Chenault. I knew where you were going.
Just keep an eye, because everyone
he's
went
in that
crazy.
Role.
Yeah. Everyone went crazy when Travis Etienne did wide receiver stuff at that first rookie minicamp. LaVisca Chenault is the guy that could be the H, meaning he could be the guy that does the fly sweeps, the wildcat stuff, the bubble screens and stuff over the middle, the role that Percy Harvin played for Urban Meyer in the past. Keep an eye on LaVisca Chenault. I'm not guaranteeing that he's going to put up big numbers, but of the wide receivers in Jacksonville, this is the one that could go big in the second season.
There's a play. I know I referenced it. We put it on his tape when he got picked, but there's a play against Stanford. I think it was 4th and 2. And LaVisca Chenault was either in the wildcat or they had given him the ball on a jet sweep on like a 4th and 2. The end they didn't block the end, and they assumed that the end was going to crash down, and he's just going to – well, they didn't block the end. The end's not fooled. He's just staring. Stanford defensive end just staring face-to-face, and Laviska Shenault runs him flush over to get the first down there when he was at Colorado. And I remember talking to Mel Tucker about that play, who our buddy who was the head coach of Colorado. He's like, you got to go back and watch that. So we ended up – long story, we ended up putting it on the draft tape when he got picked. And I'm sitting here, and I'm listening to all – and I'm not going to go into all the Tim Tebow stuff, but I'm hearing all this talk about Tim Tebow and Wildcat. I'm sitting here going like, you folks need to go watch Laviska Shenault in the Wildcat and tell me that you – if you're given your choice with those two options – at the 4 yard line, that you're going to put Tim Tebow there and not Laviska Shenault.
That's all I'm saying. It's all smoke and mirrors. And in talking to people down there, like, they are just trying to find what Coach Meyer wants is explosive players. The points come from your ability to generate explosive plays, big plays. And who are the guys that can deliver that? And so Laviska Shenault is certainly one of those guys. And as you pointed to, DJ, going back to our time on the road, I don't know if you were scouting when he was at Utah. When I went to Utah, Parrish Warren played played the H role, and they would give it to him on fly sweeps.
It was Alex Smith years.
Shovel passes and all kinds of crazy stuff. I just envision Laviska Shenault having a much bigger role than is being talked about. So I would keep an eye on him. Is there anybody else on this list that wish – like Chase Claypool came out?
That's the whole thing with – he played great last year with all the touchdowns. And my thing with him you can get excited about is if you believe that Ben is going to be a little bit healthier, then maybe Ben can push the ball a little bit more.
Yeah, he can push the ball a little bit more. And also, don't underestimate Matt Canada taking over as the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, a lot of movement.
If you paid attention to what Canada has done throughout his career as a coordinator, going to Wisconsin, Maryland, look, he got sideways at LSU, but fly sweep stuff. Fly sweep, a lot of direct misdirection stuff, whatever. We saw some of that influence very early in the season, where that's when Chase Claypool was really being a star. Mm-hmm. I think he gets back to that. I think he gets touches, because I don't expect Ben Roethlisberger to all of a sudden be able to push the ball down the field. I think creativity has to be the way that the Pittsburgh Steelers generate their explosive plays. I believe Chase Claypool has to be one of the biggest playmakers for them on the perimeter, outside of Najee Harris coming over and getting in the backfield.
I'm trying to find this note, Buck. I've been trying to find it here. Here it is. You know, because we always talk about the scouting term urgency, right? You talk about urgent athletes, right? So I read this book called Win the Day. It's a great book. And it's not by Chip Kelly, by the way. I know that's his kind of his slogan, but it's a great book. And it's a different word, because we use urgency. So this in this book, it says urgency is born of anxiety, while immediacy is born of faith. So in other words, like, immediacy, you know what you're doing. And I thought, we don't ever use that word in scouting. Like, we talk about sudden, we talk about urgent, but like, immediate is another word. Like, we're always looking for different words to put in reports and to describe guys. I thought, man, I love that. Immediate. Like, immediate means I know it, I trust it, go. Like, whereas urgency can be a little bit frenetic, maybe a little bit chaotic.
I think the difference in words is true. You talked about the anxiety that comes with urgency, because what does John Wooden say? Be quick, don't hurry. So it's that I want you quick, but I don't want you out of control. I think of it as I want an ASAP player. As soon as possible, I want them right there. I want them to see it and go. And it's the urgency that we talk about. Look, we continue to talk about the conversation that we had with Luke Kuechly, but it's kind of like what comes to mind when he would talk about, hey, man, I've looked at so much tape that as soon as I see the guard pull, I am there.
Gone, yeah.
That's what I want. I want
it's immediate.
It shows up. They're immediate. Yeah. They're in the mix. And yes, so I like that.
That was my word. That was my little scouting word for the day here. Because think about it. We write, when you end up watching and writing, taking notes, you end up using the same words over and over again.
It becomes very redundant. And the vocabulary from a scouting standpoint is small. It's limited. Yeah. So you have to come up with different terms to excite yourself when you're reading these reports. When you're reading 150, 200 reports in front of your peers, you have to have some distance. It's not as Charlie Brown's teacher, wah, wah, wah. Everybody sounds alike. So you need to be able to differentiate some of the players.
Yeah, for anybody's listening, they want to check out this book. It's called Win the Day. It's by Mark Batterson. It's a really, really good book. All right, let's get to some of these rookie wideouts, Buck. I'm going to read off the names of the guys that went early here, and just give me the guys you think are going to pop. And we have the obvious ones there at the top. Mm-hmm. But you've got Ja'Marr Chase, the Bengals; Waddle, the Dolphins; Devontae Smith, the Eagles; Kadarius Toney to the Giants; Bateman to the Ravens; Elijah Moore to the Jets; Rondale Moore to the Cardinals; Dwayne Eskridge to the Seahawks; Tutu Atwell to the Rams; and then let's go Terrace Marshall to the Panthers.
Ooh, the one that pops for me is Elijah Moore. And I know I probably stole your thunder just because.
No, that's good.
When I think about the Jets and the lack thereof, meaning the lack thereof established playmakers, I think Elijah Moore can slide right in and kind of grow with Zach Wilson and have some immediate production right out the way. And we've talked about it. The young receivers that typically explode or burst onto the scene are the route runners. And when I think about Elijah Moore, I don't know if there's a better route runner than Elijah Moore, and his ability to be able to do it from the slot is going to be a problem. And if you don't have a skilled nickelback opposite him, he is going to wear you out. And when we think about the easier throws for young quarterbacks, they're really inside the numbers, because it's there, the ball comes out, it's quick. And then with the influx of the RPO game, the quick rhythm game, that's where those passes go to. And I think Elijah Moore is going to be the beneficiary of playing in a system that allows him to shine right away.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at it, and I keep going back to A.J. Brown in the second round, right? Same school, Ole Miss. You've got somebody that's – now A.J. Brown's a different body type, but you got somebody that was an outstanding route runner that's physically tough, that – put up big numbers and performed in the best conference against the best corners in college football. And that then there's also like a little edge to them, like a little bit of a chip, a little edge to the way that they play. And I'm like, that's the, like, if you're going to say the second round receivers that hit big, like he kind of fits all the different marks that we're looking for.
No, DJ, that's the thing. And that's the thing that we look for. And we really go back, and if we're really honest with ourselves, we've had more success finding all-star receivers in the second and third rounds than we have in the first round. Part of that is just because the sheer volume of pass catchers that are coming out of college these days is different than it's ever been. More guys are catching a ton of balls, running routes, and doing this stuff on the daily. The influence and the exposure that guys have gotten from playing 7-on-7 since they were teenagers. We're seeing, I would say, a better product at the position than any other spot. And so I think teams can recognize that. And so I think some of these other guys can ball. Like, it'd be interesting to see what Rondale Moore does with Arizona, because I know people are focused on A.J. Green, and I think A.J. Green is probably more mystique than magic at this point, because his name, he hasn't been that player, but they want to go four wides. They want to put four wide receivers on the field. They want someone that where they can create space and make the game easy. Basketball on grass for Kyler Murray. Rondale Moore's speed can be a factor, and also the versatility, because I expect him to kind of get in the mix in the backfield, because they don't really have an established running back or anything. I would expect Rondale Moore to do a bunch of different things as Cliff Kingsbury digs into his bag to try and find a way to really ignite this offense.
Well, I always talk about trying to learn from your mistakes, and – boy, Buck, I wish I was a lot better at putting that into practice, you know, because it's a lot easier to say that. Oh, I made this mistake. Yeah. I'll never make that mistake again. I find myself making a lot of the same mistakes over and over again. But I was thinking about Tutu Atwell, who goes in the second round to the Rams. Tutu Atwell was in my top 50. I think he was in the 30s on my first list that I had. So you talked about the first grade that you have on a guy and ends up being more accurate in the long run than maybe as you kind of go through the process. So he goes and he's listed at 165, and then he shows up at his pro day. He's 155, and then he goes to the combine to get his physical there because he had a back issue or something. He's 149, and I'm like, dude, like I was hoping this guy, one of those deals where he's listed at 165, he maybe juices himself up, pumps himself up a little bit to one, you know, drink a bunch of water, get to 170. And then he weighed 170. He's going to play in the 160s. I'm fine. Now I'm like, this dude's in the 140s. So I lost my courage. I dropped him down my list. Well, the Rams didn't lose their courage. They take him in the second round. And I talk about repeating mistakes. Devin Singletary, running back out of FAU, who the Bills took, I believe, in the third round.
Yeah.
He was in my top 50. Loved him as a player. then you get the measurables at the combine. He comes in, he's smaller than I thought he was going to be. I think he ran like in the 4.6s, or, you know, he didn't run that well. And I lost my courage on him, even though I love the tape, love the player. I kind of just kicked him down the road a little bit and dropped him on my list. Well, turns out he's a good player. Like, he's the guy that we thought he was when we watched him on tape. So, long story short, that to me is, I'm anxious to see how Tutu Atwell does, to see if I've made the same mistake 2 years in a row, or I guess two of the last 3 years in a row.
Yeah, no, here's the thing, because a lot of the player's success is really determined by the system that they're in and the creativity of the play caller. For the Rams to take Tutu Atwell, to me, suggests that Sean McVay has a plan in place for how he wants to utilize him. And for them to take him in the second round means that he is going to be a key contributor. He's the expectation. He's going to be a key contributor. It's different. When we talk about second round players, we're talking about starters, guys that you envision being prominent contributors in the thing. So what is that? Does this mean that Sean McVay may go back to what I thought was the best part of their offense years ago, when they did do all the fly sweep stuff and the misdirection stuff and whatever? Because I would say the reason the offense has kind of been ground to a halt a little bit has been they played more traditional than unconventional, like they did. Tutu Atwell is a guy that you want to put the ball in his hands. You want him to really use his speed, not only vertically, but horizontally. Maybe they find a way to get him the ball, because it is proven that he is a playmaker. He's a handful now, because he's quicker than a hiccup in one-on-one situations on the perimeter. So can you contain him? Can you corral him? I think he has to touch the rock.
Well, I think that it was interesting, too, that the Rams had a philosophy, and we talked about them having a type, and we always go back to Coach Billick and his thought process on building a basketball team. You want guys different shapes and sizes, different skill sets. Well, they had a redundant skill set. Good players, obviously. Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, Van Jefferson, kind of similar
guys.
They're all the same.
They're all chain movers. They're all pretty much the same type.
Yeah, so they didn't have a basketball. If they had a basketball team, it was just all the same, you know, two guards or whatever. So then they go out in this offseason, and we'll see how much, you know, DeSean Jackson can stay on the field. But DeSean Jackson, and then you bring in Tutu Atwell, they've changed. This is a different guy than what they've had. They haven't had that guy.
No, they haven't had that guy. Now, they're still playing small ball. Like, they're still
Power forwards in there.
No bigs. We're going to spread them out. We can go isolation and see if we can dribble, drive, and kick. But the speed factor. What they didn't have with Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods on the field, Van Jefferson, they don't have anybody that forces the defense to back up. If anything, you squeeze down. And so some of the lack of big plays that comes from the offense is because now everything is really, really crowded. Everybody's within 10 to 12 yards of the line of scrimmage. The defensive backs are squatting on things because they don't have to worry about the ball going over the head. Some would say, is that a Jared Goff thing or was it a wide receiver thing? Well, now two things have changed. Matthew Stafford comes in. We know he can throw the ball out the stadium.
Yep.
To give him a proper playmate, you have to have more speed on the field. If not, you really take away one of his superpowers. So Tutu Atwell, DeSean Jackson, if healthy, allows them to stretch the field vertically and horizontally, utilizing their speed to create separation.
Was it like the dance club music? Shot, 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 shot.
Yeah, we got to take shots. You cannot score without explosive plays. This is almost like an analytic thing. When you dig in the numbers, you have to have these 20-plus plays on scoring drives. Mm-hmm. It's too hard to go 5 yards, 5 yards, station 5 yards down. You need a big bopper in the lineup. I mean, I love small ball baseball. I love hitting and moving over and stealing bases or whatever. But there's something to, the big hitter comes up, boop, knocks it out.
Change the game.
That's why you got to be careful with the Dodgers, because I know you're gloating right now about the Padres.
I'm a little nervous.
But you just have to be careful, because you saw old Albert Pujols. He dusted off every now and then.
On the list of things I'm worried about, Albert Pujols is not. He's not there. Here's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about the Dodgers being right there, behind the Giants and the Padres, and the fact that Bellinger has missed a bunch of games and has played terrible. Corey Seager's missed a bunch of games, and he wasn't, lighting the world on fire. And Mookie Betts is playing terrible. Like, they've got three MVP level guys that are not playing well, and they're still right there, And that, the thing I love about baseball, this is one of the things I love about baseball, is when you talk to baseball scouts, they always reference the back of the card. Like, over 162 games, you kind of are what the back of the card says you are. You know? So if you if you're hitting 230 and you've hit 280 8 years in a row, we know that a hot streak's coming. You know, it is what it is.
See, now you sound like the urgency, immediacy.
I know.
Thing.
Yeah,
I'm a little urgent, sounds little like you're a little anxious because it's uncomfortable for you.
We haven't played good against the
Cubs. It's uncomfortable you playing from in front.
Good.
I know, playing from in front. That's a little different. And that's
Tatis
the thing about
left
baseball.
The game yesterday.
Oh, see, and man. it's still too early to be all worried about baseball.
Not even at the halfway point. But this is
don't worry about it till August.
I know, but this is how illegitimate the World Series of Dodgers one was last year. Buck, think about where we are in this season. We're four games away from game 60. That was the whole season last year. Like, this doesn't even feel like this season's even started.
You can only you can only win the games that they put out there. Like, if they have a 60-game season, The Dodgers are the champs.
I just remember going to games and I get ice cream in that little mini helmet. This is a mini championship. You should get a little mini trophy.
So that you get smaller rings. Yeah. You get an asterisk.
It's a ring pop. Trust me, if the Potters would have won, I'd have been celebrating that thing like it was nobody's business. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. It will be interesting. And look, there's something to like just seeing it. And so I told you, you take the wrong approach to baseball because I see your emotions are so apparent on Twitter.
I am. I'm in.
You're up and down. You love them. Yeah. Then you're sad. Then you love them.
I text Petros and Money during their show yesterday and just talk crap. And then because I know that they'll say it on the air while I'm driving, it just entertains me. Like I'm like that annoying little brother, just like nag.
You are, because I see your tweets and I'm like, because you had Lance. You asked Lance to go to Minute Maid Park and see if he could walk around the stadium to find.
I just want to see if he can find the ball.
If he can find the ball, did he get over the track? I mean, it's the little stuff. I mean, come on, man.
I've been in an abusive relationship with the Padres for a long time, man. Now it's like we're getting along well. We just got we're honeymoon phase right now. It's good.
I do like the uniforms.
Yeah, the Browns the pinstripes are pretty dope.
I do like the uniforms. I think it's a very interesting deal to watch.
Can I close this out with a little homage to scouting? Because as scouts, we always, we have our food choices, right? You know, you go to different cities, you have your choices. As much as I'd like to say we were foodies and eat at local establishments, we kind of have your chains, your established, that you're connected to. So I just got back from a little trip, took my daughter to Hawaii. No Chick-fil-A over there right now, Buck. It's a major problem on the island. Like that has got to be resolved. I mean, we cannot refer to it as paradise when I can't go get some chicken minis in the morning.
I haven't had
Chick-fil-A in like 5 days. Like we got to wrap this thing up so I can get over Chick-fil-A before breakfast is closed. Come on.
I love it.
Oh, it's the best. Get you a little strawberry jam on the minis.
I love it.
It's the best.
Hey, look, we don't do stock tips on here, but I just want to let you know, being from North Carolina, that I think Krispy Kreme just is about to go public. So you might get a little bit of that. Yeah.
Oh, I made it bad. You don't want to – you don't want any financial advice from me. You see my
–
Rough.
You got to ride it out. Like, you got to get back to the
– be working until I'm 80.
The baseball card. The back of the baseball card.
Yeah, you got to trust a long-term place. Oh, no. I'm coming out of my shoes. I have not been choking up in my E-Trade account. It's not working out well. All right. It's good to see you, man. Let's get out of here on that. I don't even know if I can afford the minis. Jeez, now that I'm thinking about it. All right. Let's get out of here. Hope everybody enjoyed this. It was fun to be back again talking ball with Buck. We've got some good stuff coming your way. Some guests on the way over the summer as well. So appreciate you guys hanging with us. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.